Lives podcast, where your voice is more than a melody.
Join us in planting seeds in a growing field. For today's episode of Able Voice podcast, we are joined by our guest, Jay Filia. After a varied 28-plus year career in the criminal justice field, primarily working as a counselor and program facilitator, Jay shares that the highlight was helping to start a music program with the incarcerated women he worked with.
Jay has been around the recording and tech world in a variety of capacities in his life. Since retiring, Jay has had the opportunity to explore another lens of music technology and can often be found in his studio, Basement World Studio, working on his own music, as well as taking on a producer role for other artists, including Kim.
Today, Jay will share with us his musical journey and give us a glimpse into the world of music tech.
And welcome to another episode of Able Voice Podcast with Haley and Kim.
Hi, everyone. Today, we are so excited to have Jay with us today, a very good friend of mine, to talk a little bit about music tech. So, hi, Jay. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. And yourself?
Doing really well.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We're so excited to delve into a little bit of the music tech world and hear a little bit about your journey. So, we're hoping to start off, maybe if you can just share with us your connection to music and any experience or exposure that you have to the field of music there.
Well, my connection to music, I played guitar since I was young. I think I was 12 or something like that. I wanted to play guitar. My parents made me take lessons, one of those eight lesson intro things, and I believe they thought I would not stick with it, so but I did, and then they got me guitar. From the earliest times, I've been writing songs, and I can remember recording on a little cassette player when I'm 12 or 13 or whatever it was, and off and on from then I've been playing and writing songs.
That's awesome. And you have a little bit of experience with the field of music therapy in our relationship, at least, and a couple of collaborations that we've done. Can you share a little bit about maybe some of the community music that you've done or anything that you've taken away from music therapy?
Yeah, well, when I was working for the Correctional Service of Canada, I think it was probably about 2015 or so, I decided to stop being a counselor and explore different opportunities in the institution. I became a social programs officer, and that's really a catch-all kind of position from, arranging outside shopping for the women so they can buy knitting supplies or clock radios to running programs to help them, prepare for a release that's going to occur imminently, or sports programs. And because I was well known, mostly because I walked around with guitar shirts as a musician, I was getting a lot of pressure to do something musically, some from the women. My immediate supervisor at the time was asking me to use whatever talents I had to do something, and I was resisting because I was just not in that space where I was doing anything musically at all. And I didn't really want to step into it because the women want to learn cover song. I'm like, I'm not a cover song guy. I don't know any cover songs. I write my own music. And they want to do live stuff, and I'm not a teacher for music, and I'm definitely not much of a performer. I only did open mics myself a few times because it was a challenge. Yeah. And I think the women put on a, it was kind of an open mic talent show, and the sound was horrible, and I was just like, I can't handle this. I can help, so I will. And the next time someone asked me if I would do a music program, or I said yes, and started, helping, basic lessons, songwriting, and I think then we decided we would have what I referred to as a showcase, and the women referred to it as a coffee house, and for some unknown reason, because we didn't have coffee, but they wanted to call it a coffee house, and so we started organizing that, and at the time, there was a music therapist in the institution, student placement, I guess it is, because the government doesn't value it enough on its own to actually have permanent music therapists in there. And she was, we're kind of concurrently working with the women on music, but not actually together. But when we were deciding to have this showcase, we kind of coordinated a little because she had some clients who wanted to participate, and she was going to back them up. And so we kind of collaborated on putting on that first one. And I thought it was a tremendous success. And of course, immediately her school year was over, and that was that. But we got another one coming in a couple, 2-3 months later. And I said, this time we're going to work together right from the start, not wait for it to end. And I think that new one was you, Kim.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's so interesting. Just even listening to your story about how you got involved with music and the story you talked about your mom and guitar lessons, and you seemed like you were a little bit hesitant to start to even get involved with music, and then to watch you then be able to use that talent in this setting and corrections and your skills in songwriting even.
Yeah, I've always, I don't believe that I'm a great singer, and I'm not a great guitar player. I'm kind of like a jack of all trades, master of none. I'm keenly aware of that, and I do have the personality where I don't really put myself up out there, and I don't challenge myself, or at least, previously. I got a 4-track recorder and a cheap drum machine to, my late teens, early 20s, just for myself to record and the music that I was making. And, when digital recorders became more popular, I got some of those. But it was all for myself. And at the same time, I was working in the community with offenders who'd been released on statutory release, and they're males, very high recidivism rates, and I was running a program to help motivate them to change. And one of the, I came across this book by Spencer Johnson, and it was really written for organizational change and business, but it really spoke to me, and I used it with my clients at times. It was called Who Moved My Cheese? Are either of you familiar with it?
No,
I've never heard of this. We'll link it in the show notes.
Spencer Johnson, Who Moved My Cheese? Very small book, 90-some pages. And it was really for people to deal with business change. And it's about a couple mice and a couple little people. And, they go and their cheese is always there. And one day it's not. And the mice are non-judgmental, and they just like, okay, we got to go get new cheese. And the little people are so wrapped up in how things were, and their question was, who moved my cheese? And the mice were, well, the question they asked themselves was, what would I do if I wasn't afraid? And if I wasn't afraid, I'd go out and look for new cheese. And it helps people dealing with organizational changes and stuff like that. But I think it really speaks to everyone all the time. And so I started to live by that what would I do if I wasn't afraid? And at the same time, before I would go into my the halfway house where I was facilitating this program, I'd hang out at a music shop in downtown Toronto and became friendly with the people there. And, you know, they asked me one time, well, where can we hear this music that you're recording with this stuff we're selling you and whatnot? And I was like, well, you can't. And they were like, why not? And then I was like, oh, what would I do if I wasn't afraid? If I wasn't afraid, I'd let people listen to my music.
Yeah.
And so I did. And then it was, oh, do you play out? And I said, no. They're, why not? And I was like, oh, darn. What would I do if I wasn't afraid? So I started to go out and play open mics with other songwriters and stuff. And not because I think people need to hear my music, because they don't, but just to challenge myself, because what would I do if I wasn't afraid? I'd do it. And it's helped me a lot of times when the opportunities come and your first reaction is, oh, I don't know. What would I do if I wasn't afraid? I'd go on that training. I'd take that course. I'd switch jobs and accept the challenge. And so doing that got me into, you know, helping the women with music and working with the music therapist.
Yeah. You're the mentality of what would I do if I wasn't afraid. I really love that, because I think that if we're wanting to explore anything in our lives, or anything new, or music tech, or music performance, or music recording, or trying new things in our sessions, that's such a great mentality for us to have. And I wanted to touch on that within the group that you facilitated, and that I was able to at times co-facilitate with you in working with the women in the prison, in that it was so unique because everyone got a chance to kind of experience that and to delve into this new world. And sometimes people would get a chance to play the electric drums or the bass or the guitar or sing or do things that they might never have that opportunity to do, all because you had that mentality of what would I do if I wasn't afraid, and just being here to create together, to explore, and to kind of to give that voice, really. And so I find it very interesting that you were able to facilitate that environment, and then now to be able to transition into a little bit of a different stage, knowing that you're not working with those women anymore, and have now transitioned into a little bit more of that solo recording world or other recording pieces there.
Mm-hmm. You know, what was going on at the institution at that time, what was very special. I mean, I spent 10 years as a counselor, and cross my heart, hope to die, stick a needle in my eye, I think did more good for more people in the 2 years that I was a social program officer and helping the women with music, even though it is seen by many as a perk and not vital, and often looked as a perk that the women don't deserve. You know,
yeah.
That you do the crime, you do the time, you're here for punishment, which is not an official policy. You know, we're supposed to help get people on the right track so they can reintegrate with society. We're not there to punish them. There's still that attitude that permeates the system. And I know that music therapy is sometimes seen by a few as an unnecessary perk and, you know, glorified babysitting or whatever. But on my end, having been, you know, a counselor and facilitating programs, and just, you know, sometimes what we're doing is not very long-term helping them get ready to go back to society. Sometimes we're just trying to get them through the day.
Yeah.
And music therapy was a great benefit to a lot of the women. And there should be more. It shouldn't be a bonus that we happen to have a university nearby that has a master's program where we can benefit from the the free labor of students who need to practice their craft. It should be something far more permanent and an integral part of the helping people get better. But
that's
not the system we're in right now.
Absolutely. I'm giving you virtual snaps right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't have said it any better myself, I think. I'm very grateful for that time that in my internship that I was able to connect with you and to delve in a little bit deeper there instead of, I was doing my music therapy a bit separately, but having a chance to connect in that group setting to bring some of those more therapeutic benefits while also seeing what you're already doing with them was a really phenomenal experience and huge fan of collaboration.
Yeah, and when we were doing those showcases and getting people to, we almost had a couple times a full band of just the women.
Yeah.
Because that was my goal. I wanted to not be a vital part of it. I wanted them to be able to play and do everything themselves and just be kind of that guiding hand helping them. And I could be behind the board when they're playing. And we're so close so often to have just about having enough people so we didn't have to do things. We have a drummer and a bass player,
yeah.
But they're the same person sometimes. We got someone that could play keyboards, but they can't play the guitar at the same time. We're just like one person short. I can remember one time when I was like, yes, this time we're going to do it. And then someone got into trouble and they were placed in segregation. I was like, darn it, we're so close.
Yeah, but absolutely.
It was amazing how the women, some of them are absolutely fearless at trying new things. Mm-hmm. And then there's others that needed that confidence to do it.
Yeah.
And when they did, they were amazing. I mean, there's some women there that would be picking up a guitar and by ear figuring out a guitar part to a song that I'd be needing to get on the internet and research. Whenever they wanted to do a cover song, I had to stay like one step ahead on guitar tabs or something like that because sometimes I didn't even know the song they were referring to. We made it happen.
Yeah. Yes. Exploring.
That's so wonderful. There's definitely a space for therapeutic music, and it sounds like it was a value not only to yourself, but also to the women that you were working with in corrections. And I would assume that your new cheese led you into a kind of, what's the word, a different direction in terms of honing that part of not being afraid to use your music within that community setting, and also not being afraid of connecting with those women on a human level. And then what made you get into the tech side of things after just being not afraid to share your music?
Well, it's never been one thing and then another. From the earliest times when I picked up a guitar, I started writing songs, and then I would put them onto a cassette. So I've always never just been a guitar player, or just been a songwriter, or just been recording. It's kind of evolved as I've gone along, and the technology has changed from, as a 12-year-old singing into a cassette recorder to, a teen recording into a 4-track recorder to now, I think in the early 2000s, I was using a standalone digital audio workstation, and now computers, it's always been a part. Trying to hook things up and doing it live with the women was a challenge, but the skills kind of transfer over a bit. It's all cables and knobs and stuff, you know, instead of getting the sound onto tape or computer bits and bytes, you're putting them out through the speakers for people to enjoy.
Okay, so I want to delve a little bit deeper into what it is you're doing now. So you told us a little bit about how tech has never kind of, like, it's never really been one thing and then the other. But from what I understand, at least, you're doing a little bit more of the tech, sound engineering, recording stuff now than you would have been in the past. Maybe if you want to tell us a little bit about what you're doing now and what made you want to delve in deeper there.
Well, yeah, in the past, I pretty much almost exclusively just recorded my own stuff for my own benefit. And so when I'm doing that, I'm not putting that much care or thought into it, because it's just for me. Sure, it may go out on the internet on some forum or group where amateurs are posting their stuff, but it's just been for me. I haven't, you know, put it out for sale on iTunes or something like that. It's been just for me. I don't think I've ever, I think I did put an album out for sale, but I think I was charging $10,000 or something like that. I figured I'd have as much chance of getting one person to pay $10,000 as 1,000 people to pay $10,000. So I think that was a kind of tongue-in-cheek that you could have bought it for $10,000. But otherwise, it's just been for me. So I had what I refer to as one-take vocals, OTV. I just sing it once and that's that, because it's not going to get any better. But now, you know, when I retired, I decided I'd be more serious about my home recordings and perhaps record other people if it could work out. And I kind of started what I refer to as a non-profit indie label, where it's not intentionally non-profit, it's just going to be effectively non-profit, you know, Basement World Records. And my first project is actually recording an EP/album with Kim.
Yeah!
And any website you go to on how to record and get songs that are radio ready or professional sounding, number one, it always says, start with a great song. And with Kim, I believe we have a lot of great songs. And so I'm taking my time and my care in recording that. And I upgraded from, you know, a standalone digital audio workstation where, you know, you're trying to do things on a little 3x4 screen to computer based, and the editing possibilities are just endless. And I think every time I go through a song, make some changes, send it to Kim for comment, and then I go back to do it, I've learned how to do something quicker or better the next time around. And it's it could be a rabbit hole that you could go down and never get out of, but it's enjoyable. And in addition to working on Kim's stuff, you know, I've got a couple of my own projects in the works. You know, Papa J plays his hit, and it is singular. I don't know which song is going to be the hit, but chances are it's not going to be more than one if there is one. And another one, which is more of a therapeutic process for me, which is Bad, and for the G-rated audience, Bad Stuff Is Going to Happen, which I started writing during a period when my sister was getting ill, and I keep adding songs to it right now, because bad stuff keeps happening. And I'm also in a pre-production phase with a formerly incarcerated woman with whom we first worked with in the music program at GDI.
Just to hear you talk about, you know, the way that music has touched your life, it just lights up. We're here, like, beaming through the screen, the computer, and I feel like I'm getting some inside scoop. Can you tell us, what's it like to work with Kim? What's it really like?
I don't know.
I find it a little difficult because we're so far away from each other.
Yeah.
But she's a phenomenal singer.
Yeah, she is.
That's a great person. Like, having her around in this studio is always a treat. And she's not a diva.
Oh, good to hear.
That's good. Although she's probably a little more critical of herself than she needs to be, with a half dozen takes when I'm blown away at the first one. But it's always good to have more material until it gets so overwhelming on what do I need to cut out here, or which one of these great takes should I keep?
Yeah. I feel like as musicians who love this craft so much, we are just hypersensitive to even hearing our voices back when we're recording, or, you know, we know when we could have done something differently with our inflection, or it's really personal, especially when you're recording music for yourself.
Yeah. And I think too, I mean, I have to laugh when Jay mentioned if it gets too overwhelming, because I know that there are a couple songs that we've worked on where we just have so many background vocal takes, and it's not necessarily because of the quality of it, but more because of like, okay, this song could go so many different ways. This one background vocal can change the entire feeling of a portion of a song. And so that's been really quite neat to explore, because it's not something that I personally get to do in my life a lot when making those choices with my clients for other people, and I can hear those things for them. But it's been kind of cool because Jay's kind of been my person in this process of, okay, what do you hear? Like, what about this instrument? What about that? And kind of helping me to explore that in a more personal sense, as opposed to for/with others. So that's been real fun.
It has been such an incredible journey recording this project, and we are so excited to get to share a little sneak peek today just for you, our Able Voice family. Music has been such a huge part of my life ever since I can remember. It was always my outlet for expression. I would just throw myself into my music, whether that was just for fun because I was looking for something to pass the time, or because I'd had a difficult day and I needed to get something off my chest, or I needed to vent, or I needed to write things down on paper. And so my whole childhood life, I wrote songs about silly things, about very real things, about challenging experiences. And I think that's really what actually got me into the field of music therapy, is recognizing how powerful music has been for me to be able to express and to process and to work through some of the most difficult things
that I've experienced in life, but also to bring me the most joy and clarity and sense of self within that world. So this project has been so special for me because I think as I went into my music therapy studies and university and adulthood, I sometimes shied away from my music or didn't give it as much time as I would have loved to, put it on the back burner so that I could create music in different capacities or focus on my schoolwork or whatever billions of other things I needed to do on my list. And in my work as a music therapist, I spend so much of my time creating resources and creating music for and with my clients. And sometimes you just need to be able to create for yourself. We hold so much for the people that we work with that we need to be able to let that out in some capacity. And we're also human and we have our own real things that need to be processed or need to be celebrated or need to be explored. And so having this opportunity to throw myself back into my music and to get to go along this journey with Jay in recording it and figuring out what sound and what I want to put into the world and collaborating with him to find all of the possibilities has been really, truly special. And I'm so excited to put it out into the world and see what comes of it next. I really hope you enjoyed this little sneak peek. Follow me on Instagram and keep it locked to Able Voice Podcast to learn more about the release of my new album. Now back to the episode.
And I haven't really taken a dictatorial approach with your song. There are some producers who would be, you know, just sing and let me do the rest. And when I've sent you some versions, it's like, everything you did is in there, and it's, what are we going to take out?
Yeah.
And I'm a little reluctant to make some of those decisions for you because I've never worked with background vocals or had so much choice in background vocals.
Yeah.
There are a lot of takes, and it's, each one is kind of different. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, which one do we put in? Which one do we leave out? And when, because, you know, there is a craft to songwriting where, you know, you have to build and then come to a resolution, and you can't just start off at 100. you kind of have to build a song. And
why not?
It's just one of those rules of thumb that, you know, a convention that can be broken. I mean, for every rule of songwriting and recording there's lots of exceptions. You know, songs start off with the chorus. Some start fast. Some have no bridges. You know, whenever there's a rule, there are exceptions.
Yeah.
So, Haley, if you want to start songs off at 100 and just keep the pedal to the floor, you're free to do so.
Yeah. I think we're all about rule breaking. I love not following, you know, your typical rules of thumb when it comes to something creative. And, you know, sometimes even in our work as therapists, we have to throw that rule book out the window when we're composing or trying to record with our clients, because it's really about just capturing their vision. We're just the orchestrators of what they want to bring to life.
Yeah. To that point, like, there are a lot of music therapists who do have great knowledge of technology. There are also many who are kind of just dabbling, but in our work, sometimes we like to record our sessions or elements of it for a variety of reasons. Sometimes it's to just capture an improvisation that we've done so we can listen back, but sometimes it is more driven around songs that our clients are writing or that we're writing with them that we might just want to have as a memory, or as in a full-scale production of this person wants to hear what their song can become. And so with that in mind, from the experience that you have, are there any skills or abilities that you think could be useful for music therapists to have in their toolkit to support these types of projects?
Probably the biggest thing, if you're helping someone craft and or record a song, is the ability to kind of step back and listen with a critical ear. If you're trying to capture the recording and have the best recording that you can, you know, being able to listen with a critical ear. As far as tech stuff goes, things are changing so fast and so rapidly that, you know, depending on how, what your end goal is, whether it's just to play back so the client can hear it, or to have something very professional sounding so they can, you know, share it with friends and family, there's such a wide variety of stuff. And so figuring out what your end goal is and looking at what you have can help you to make decisions on what you need to make that happen. But as far as skills and abilities, if you're already a music therapist, you have the skills to get the best out of the client and to make the project happen.
Yeah, I agree completely. Songwriting is something that I really love to do within my sessions. But I know that for a lot of music therapists, sometimes they shy away from incorporating songwriting within their sessions because it's a bit scary. You know, we want to make this beautiful depiction of what this person is wanting to express, but then how do we move into that next step of actually recording it? And so I think just in terms of basic programs and tools and resources, like, I know there are a lot of free things and programs out there that you can use. Like, we're using Audacity right now to record our podcast. But do you have anything that you might recommend for somebody who's doesn't have a whole lot of expertise and is just looking to try out some recording, that's user-friendly? Are there any things that you might recommend for tech?
Yeah, it depends on what you already have and what the, as I said, and what the end purpose is. You know, there's people doing live streaming shows right now on Facebook or YouTube where they're just using their phone.
Mm-hmm.
And most phones have a couple microphones, so if you're just recording, you can record on your phone. And then there's apps where you can be recording more than one track on your phone, where it's kind of like the 1980s with a four-track recorder, so you can record four different things. And inexpensive, well, under $100 or under $200, you could get interfaces where you can, you know, plug in a microphone or a guitar. Mm-hmm. And even those can go into your phone, let alone a laptop or a computer, and then using one of the free programs. Like Audacity is a one that's popular, GarageBand, mm-hmm. and Reaper. And then all the air quote professional softwares like Pro Tools, Logic, mm-hmm. and the one that I use, Studio One, they all have different levels. And there's free versions of those that are designed to get you hooked. So you buy the upscale versions, but they still have some good functions on them as far as editing and some plugins to make your sound a little more professional. But to get the music into your phone or your laptop, if you're taking that next step up from just recording through the phone, like, you're going to need some kind of audio interface. And there's some that will just connect right into your phone or through USB into a laptop. And then you can multitrack.
I love accessibility.
Yeah. if I was starting today, I'd be Googling, how do I do this with what I've got? And you'd be overwhelmed by the options.
Yeah. And speaking of overwhelm, as music therapists, we're always like the bag ladies. We have so many things to carry in with us to sessions. It would just be like unimaginable to be carrying like a professional microphone with us all the time and like all of this heavy recording equipment. But it's just so great that everything has become a little bit more accessible. We can do it right from our phones now.
Yeah, we tell ourselves, well, I need that large diaphragm microphone, and well, then I need a preamp to power it, and I've got to have the best monitors and to get this professional recording. And some people think you have to do it in a studio and stuff. And then there are people that will show you, hey, I recorded these vocals on an iPhone, and it has 10,000 downloads or streams on Spotify or 10,000 downloads on iTunes, and you've got albums at the top of the Billboard charts someone recorded in their bedrooms.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, for every one of those, you need this stuff. There's going to be people like, heck no. It's awesome. You can get pretty good sound out of very little stuff sometimes.
Yeah.
And some people, it's what's going in, you get it back out. You can't put garbage in and get a symphony orchestra coming out the other end. It's not going to happen, but you can get good sound with minimal stuff, and I would recommend not going over what the purpose of it is. If you're doing stuff that your clients, for them just to hear, you don't need to be sinking in $10,000 in equipment, and you don't need to be pulling a trolley cart behind you because, well, I need to set up these monitors so we can hear the sound that's coming. Basic stuff.
Yeah. Ah, so much knowledge. So it's so nice to hear about a little bit more of your journey, Jay, because I feel like we have gotten to know each other quite well, but it's nice for me to be able to hear some of the stories that you shared with us today and a little bit more of, how you've gotten to what you're working on right now. I wonder, I'm going to throw one last question at you here, but I wonder if you just have any last things that you want our audience to know or any words of wisdom or anything to end off there.
Words of wisdom.
Or tips.
Yeah. Don't be afraid. Trust your instincts. And if you're a music therapist out there, keep doing what you're doing because you are making a difference. I've seen it myself in some of the worst circumstances. It's made a difference. So that would be it.
Yeah.
That's so lovely. If people wanted to find you, how might they connect with you?
They could always check out my webpage or Facebook page, basementworldstudio.com. And I believe I have links there where you can send me an email if you're interested in anything I can do to help you. people out there want to work on music, collaborate, have questions. I'm not hard to find.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Jay. We really appreciate you coming on and chatting with us and sharing all of this beautiful information with us and our audience. And hopefully we can continue some of these conversations in the future.
Absolutely. I hope you found 15 minutes of useful material in there.
I know we did.
I think we found way more than that.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Able Voice Podcast.
If you want to find more content like this, please subscribe to the podcast and follow us on social media at MTA Haley
and at MTA.Kimberly to get notified when new episodes become available.